CliffCentral.com. What's the date today? The 18th already. 18th yes. of November.
Yeah, oh, heading thick man. And fast into the final.
Yeah, and look, I always say I love this time of year, but there's pressure, man. I'll tell you why. People, you only got like a month to make whatever you said you were going to do happen. And if you don't do it, it's almost like your year ends on a bit of a sour note. No one wants to do that. You want to end on as positive a note as possible, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Oy, oy, oy. Well,
it's okay. not a positive note for these two drivers.
Who?
Head-on crash.
Oh, no.
In somewhere between Hoedspruit and Swadini in Limpopo.
Oh, no.
It was a head-on collision between a bakkie and a car. But what's interesting about this is that the endangered species unit was called to the scene on this one.
Hmm?
Which makes you think, huh?
Mm? What did they crash into?
Firstly, 8 people died in this crash, so it was actually really huge.
Yeah.
Another of the 2 injured people transferred to hospital died later. So the reason why they were called mm-hmm. is because buckets containing snake skins,
oh no,
starfish, crabs, and other dead sea creatures were found scattered about the crash site.
Really?
Apparently, they were being carried in the back of the bucky, and investigations into their origin are unfolding.
Ugh. So these guys were involved in like,
some serious, like,
some dodgy shit.
Yeah.
I don't know. Abalone is always the big one, right?
Yeah.
Palamun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these people, if you driving around with buckets of this stuff.
There's got to be a lot of money in it.
There has to be, right?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Very weird.
All right. So I only found out because the guy had an accident.
Yes, exactly. Otherwise, it would have been going on and on.
Jesus, that's ridiculous.
Do you...
The most ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, this might be the most ridiculous, though.
Yeah?
The flat earth conspiracy.
Millie Bobby Brown and all of her friends must just have a moment to sit down, please.
It's spreading around the globe.
Tell me.
Pardon the pun.
Oh, spreading globe. Oh, yes, right. Around.
Okay.
So the flat earthers.
That's all, folks. Mm-hmm.
Flat earthers.
Yes.
More and more of them are grouping and going to the seminars. How can they not believe? You can see the Earth's curvature from a plane.
No. Well.
Okay, but also, what seminars are they having? Does it really bother them so much?
Imagine going to one of these dumb seminars.
I really want to find hanging around that out.
The Flat Earth International Conference.
Yeah. What's on the agenda at that
600
seminar?
600 people went to that.
Oh.
In Brazil, Britain, and Italy.
A seminar of Flat Earthers.
Flat Earth conventions.
I can blow the whole thing up.
Speakers gave presentations including Space is Fake. And
wait, hold up. Okay, so the Earth is flat, and also
it doesn't revolve. So they say the sun and everything else is going around us.
Okay, and then also space doesn't exist.
But surely people would have fallen off the edge of the Earth by now.
No, I'm sorry. It's just ridiculous that we have to even have this conversation in 2019.
These people need their heads read.
And if the Earth is the flat one, then how come all the other planets are round?
No, they're saying space is fake. These round planets don't exist.
Okay, so, yeah.
The way that we've been taught that which revolves around which is all untrue.
Yeah, all right. You guys knock yourselves out. It's like those people who, you know, they believe that they're unicorns or that they're of elf kind or whatever they are. You can make up any shit in your head. And you know who I blame for this?
Who?
I blame all these people who say you can be anything you want to be. You can dream it. You can be it. All that crap that they put out there. Like Oprah Winfrey used to say to people, you can do anything. You can't. You've got to tell people it's not possible. And if you're too stupid, you shouldn't be out there having seminars.
Oh, it was the documentary, latest one, by Netflix, has been endorsed by rapper B.O.B. because he's a flat earther.
Yeah, of course.
And then, like, this survey is really helpful, right? Out of more than 8,000 American adults, 1 in 6 are not entirely certain that the world is round. It doesn't mean a
thing. Are you telling me 1 in 6 people
in America
is not sure that the earth is round?
Yes.
We're doomed. Like we're doomed.
But these
as humanity.
Are also the same Americans that I watched on Jimmy Kimmel this weekend, where they were asked, name a neighboring country of the United States.
And they couldn't?
They said, one said Europe.
Mm.
One said, I can't think of any.
Yeah, look. A part of me just wants to get off the earth, because I think it's just it's too late for us now.
Well
now you can't, because it's round.
Jump off the edge.
I can't, yeah. I can just go to the edge. Oh, my God. It's just, isn't this insane? This is insane. These people should be put in an asylum.
Wow.
I do not understand how it's possible. How do people, listen, they figured this stuff out years ago. The ancient Egyptians knew the earth was round. You're telling me that there are people who think that there's an edge and we can fall off the edge. Where is it? Go there and show me the edge. If it's flat, all I'm asking, just take me to the edge.
They do admit that it's round, though. It's not like it's flat and
but
rectangular.
It's flat and round.
Yes.
So take me to the edge. Let's go to the edge all together.
That sounds like a pop song.
And let's all look over the edge.
Take me to the edge.
Let's see where it stops, okay?
Yeah,
and if you can just show me where it stops, I will be willing to concede that everything else may also be bullshit.
Do you know what further bothers me about flat earthers? Is there...
Uh-oh.
It's that energy of... wanting to prove that the earth is so flat, and it sounds like a silly
like they'll give up everything just to
the conviction of trying to prove this. Yes,
yeah.
To me, says, why are you devoting so much energy to it?
It's a lot of work, man.
I mean, the biggest argument, of course, is that none of us have been up in space and seen with our own eyes what it looks like.
Yeah, does it really change the price of your bread? And
no,
the
some of us
of
have.
Day,
some people actually
the earth
have
be circular
been.
Circular or flat?
No. But
some of the best scientists in the world have been.
They take astronauts up there, and we've landed men on the moon, and we've sent sat. How do you think you're getting the satellite from your? Have you seen all these people? They watch TV. They watch satellite TV, and they're going to tell me that the Earth is flat, and these satellites that we launch are spinning around for God knows how they think the physics works. But the satellites are actually spinning around the Earth because of the Earth's gravity, and if it wasn't round, they'd come plummeting down onto the Earth.
Okay, so here's their theory about why we don't fall off the edge.
Okay.
They say that the planet is a circular disk with Antarctica acting as an ice wall barrier around the entire edge. People climb Mount Everest. They would have tried to climb these mountains to climb the edge.
No, there's no edge. This is the point, these lunatics. Some people you cannot help. You could take a horse to water, you cannot make it drink. Oh my God, it drives me insane. And I know I shouldn't get upset about this, because really, if people want to believe this crap, they're allowed to. Ulrich says, I wish Sir Isaac Newton could come back from the dead just for one day and have these morons tell him about the flat earth. He would want to die again.
Mm. In 2019.
It's just mad. Hoffman sent me this picture this morning. Gareth, here's what you're looking for. With a picture of a dead end sign.
Yeah.
On a road, and it says World's End Lane.
Uh-huh.
And that's apparently where the edge of the world is. It's just crazy. Ben Rosen tweets, 90 scientists saying, we cloned a sheep, we landed a robot on Mars, and scientists today, for the first time and for the last time, the Earth is round. We have to actually go backwards to go forwards.
And still declare things like this.
Unreal. And people believe that hell is in the core of the earth and Satan roams around the core.
Yeah, well, that rings true for those realms that you often speak about.
Hmm. Yeah, sure. You know what? People believe anything. Mm. They will believe anything. Morons. Can't help everybody.
Well, here's...
Got to leave some of humanity behind as we forge into the future.
Here's some substance into a new belief that we can have. And I know so many people, even adults, who will want to harp on about this. But are you a person who genuinely like enjoys the taste of vegetables, especially like green vegetables.
Yeah, I love vegetables.
I do.
Okay. You know those people who don't, though, right?
Yeah, of course.
Like Gugu's shaking his head right now. He's like, I don't eat that.
Oh, no, I've got a friend who won't eat anything green, even if it's oregano spice on his pizza. Mm-hmm. He will not eat it.
Wow. It's a problem.
I know a couple of people who also just, like, with conviction, do not like the taste of water.
Yes, I know of those two.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's beyond a health thing, and they've tried it, but they just don't enjoy the taste of water. So that
surely, as a vegetarian, you'd like vegetables, or not necessarily?
No, he's a bizarre. See, is not a good example of anything.
Then how do you get by? What do you eat?
Leanne, that's a story for another day. But like I eat veggies, but I don't necessarily enjoy it. But I know some people who just like will stand by not liking the taste of green veggies at all. And now there's a new study that actually proves that people who don't like the taste of green veggies, particularly the likes of broccoli or kale or cabbage, could have what scientists are now dubbing the super taster gene. Which makes certain people significantly more sensitive to bitter taste. And this is why certain people just don't like veggies. And it's now scientific ruling.
These super tasters, I know of them because of the wine industry. You get some sommeliers and wine connoisseurs who have this phenomenon, the super taste bud. But I haven't heard about sensitivity to vegetables.
Yeah, this new study has found that the so-called super tasters are 2.5 times more likely to eat fewer veggies than people without the gene. And this is a new study that was presented just a couple of days ago at the American Heart Association's annual meeting, found that this gene can make people much less likely to eat these foods despite their nutritional benefits. And to come to this conclusion, these researchers from the University of Kentucky School of Medicine looked at responses from a couple of hundred people who reported how often they eat certain foods. And regardless of the nutritional value and how much they know it's important, just the actual sensation of having these foods in their mouths actually showed that they could have some sort of a super taster gene.
Do you know how many people are going to use this as an excuse?
No, exactly.
Well, there we
like
go.
It's like the flat earthers. You know what? All of this. Let me tie it all together for you. We no longer lose the weak and stupid in our tribe. All other animals on earth still have to succumb to natural selection in some way. Dumb humans and humans with bad ideas and humans with supposed super taster genes, it's really just disguising the fact that they don't like veggies.
Yes, and sticking to that.
Right. These people are now not only allowed to continue to live successfully among the rest of us because we prop them up in the world, but they're allowed to have children. And their children end up even dumber than them because they found someone dumb enough to marry them. And then the dumbness is multiplied by two.
This is the new circle of
and
life.
And they have this kid. And then the kid is super, super dumb.
And with their super, super taste.
And when they go to school, no one gives them a 0 out of 10 every time they write a test with their mouth. Because they go, well, you know, we got to make sure that little Tommy gets included in everything. And we can't ostracize him. And we can't judge him for being useless and stupid and unproductive and pointless. So we'll make sure that little Tommy gets included in stuff. And then when they have the parents' evening, the parents go and they say, well, why didn't Tommy get a 10? Because they're stupid. And then the teacher goes, well, yeah, because he didn't answer right. And they go, what? Are you discriminating against little Tommy? And so Tommy gets a 10. And then guess what? Someone has to employ little Tommy one day. And it takes about 5 seconds for them to figure out that the guy's a complete lunatic and we don't need him. And then little Tommy ends up on welfare, and everybody else pays for him. It's great.
The end.
Well, previous research has identified that there are several variations of the so-called super taste gene. But before every single Tom, Dick, and Jablani starts using this as an example, this gene is also linked to people who do not like the taste of dark chocolate.
Oh.
Okay, that's the bitterness, yeah.
Yeah, who do not like the taste of coffee.
Oh.
And who also don't like the taste of beer.
I can vouch for all of these.
How did I know you would have a stupid taste of Gene? No, huh? How did I know
like
you?
Coffee.
Of all the
you
people.
You don't like coffee.
I don't like Coke.
Yeah.
I drink beer socially, but not really a fan.
You don't enjoy the taste of beer.
I don't enjoy
beer.
The taste.
And then dark chocolate was
dark
also
dark chocolate,
listed.
I don't eat that at all.
How would
it's
you?
All just too strong. Like,
well, you know, there's a taste. You can have this taste done in South Africa. Because when we did a beer and wine show, a national beer and wine show, we actually went on a search in the South African public, i.e. the attendees of this event,
mm-hmm.
And sat them down with a taste kit on figuring out whether you're a super taster or not.
Mm.
And out of, I don't know, 3,000 people that we tasted, there was one.
Yeah.
So it shows you how rare it is.
Mm. I don't think you're one. I'm sorry.
I do think I'm one.
I don't think you're one.
I don't eat vegetables either.
Why don't you?
It's sensation, like that rubbery taste and sensation.
Okay, so that's a textural thing for you. That's not the bitterness.
Well, the green one's the bitterness, yeah, but no, like the mushrooms
hold
and
on,
the broccoli.
Everybody, Gugu's not special. Let's just stop
hey,
this
Gareth,
nonsense.
Hey, Gareth, wait,
right
hold
now.
On. Hold on, Gareth.
I want to hear the explanation, really.
Yeah.
Okay.
So veggies, the green ones, obviously it's a taste, but ugh. Like
broccoli
mushrooms,
green.
It's a texture. Like, I can't stand that rubbery.
You are so full of shit.
So I don't try veggies at all. So I don't drink Coke. Coffee, I hate. Yeah. Dark chocolate, I can't.
You might be a super taster.
No, he's not. He's not.
Yeah, you wish you were me,
Gareth. Do you enjoy wine?
Gareth?
I don't wish
I don't drink
I was
wine
you.
At all, actually.
Get out of my studio.
Unless it's sweet wine.
Get out.
Oh.
Yeah. Gareth, you wish you were me, damn it.
Get out.
Now, if you were a super taster, you would love wine because you would be picking up all the notes.
No.
In the wine.
Get out.
So you're not one.
That and like perfume or cologne, maybe.
Get out of my studio. What are you still doing here? Go and
hey,
do your work to do. Go and get the podcast ready.
Just leave me alone, damn it.
Gugu has a good news story for you in concluding this. Scientists actually are feeling bad for your kind, and they are making substitutes so that you still get the nutritional value of, you know, all of these green veggies.
Something
without
green
having
fruits,
to.
Which I just found. Out of
what
are
green fruits?
What a green fruits.
Like a powder that has all the nutrition you find in veggies.
Oh, yeah?
You
oh,
buy
no.
that and you just drink that.
Uh-oh.
You put it in whatever food you're having.
I was at the grocery store over the weekend and I saw, what was it, charcoal and...
Mm.
A charcoal and lime something. I'm like, uh-oh, no.
I need green fruits in my life.
Oh, mm. Carry on drinking all of this nonsense as well.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Jesus.
He might have discovered something today.
No, don't feed into this mania.
I am
like
being objective.
Maybe there's one in a million people who has this. It's not all over the place. Thanks for the twist. My fiance just nudged me saying, see, I have the super taster issue. See, this
yeah.
is what... Yeah.
See, now everyone is going to go with this.
It's from Chantel in Cape Town. Chantel's like, come on, this is nonsense. Gugu is just an unsophisticated person with an unsophisticated palate, and he's trying to seem special. Damn millennials. That's Carl.
If scientists are backing this up.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean he's one of them.
The verdict is open.
Stop it. He just doesn't like vegetables. There was already a word for that.
What is it?
People who don't like vegetables. I mean, a couple of words, but we already got a way to describe it. You don't need super taster. Please.
Oh, my God. So I found this list of a couple of tweets from this month alone.
Yeah.
That are actually quite funny. This one says...
What, just about anything?
Yeah, just about anything in general. This one says, when I bought my giant crystal ball, the lady looked me in the eye and said, whatever you do, never, ever leave it uncovered when you're not at home. And I said, oh, wow, because of the spirits? And she said, what? No, because if the sun hits, it's weird. It'll burn down your house.
Is that what people, why they cover a crystal ball? I've got a crystal ball.
Do you?
Yeah.
You obviously don't see anything in it.
Someone bought it for me as a gift. It's huge. It's like, it's the size of, let me just try and,
a melon.
No, it's slightly bigger than an orange.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe grapefruit-sized. Maybe even bigger than a grapefruit a little bit.
Mm.
It's huge, and it's beautiful. It's like you could see, obviously, when you look at it, it turns everything upside down. It's like a lens.
Mm.
And it's very pretty. You have to keep cleaning the damn thing because it gets very fingerprinty when people pick
it
up.
What do you do with it?
I just put it there. It's in the TV room.
Is it like a paper holder at this point?
No, because it rolls around if you use it as a paperweight. You can't. It's no use as a paperweight. See? Yeah?
It's not a half dome thing.
No, it's a.
Hey, no, the crystal ball is flat.
Oh God, she's a flat earther and a flat crystal baller. God, this is very annoying.
I'm telling you.
Yeah. All right, calm down. AS says my mother-in-law believes vegetables could cure anything. I had alopecia, and she said I didn't eat enough vegetables. That's where your hair falls out.
I think there's truth. There's a lot of truth to it because of all the minerals and vitamins in there.
Dr. Robin says they did experiments on us at Varsity, and one of them was a taste test. So there's some super bitter chemical that everyone was grossed out by. The cleverest guy in the class and I could not taste it. Also, there are some things I can't smell, which is freaky.
Oh.
Yeah, I suppose that, you know, they're all chemical things, and some people have different enzymes and chemical notes that they're able to pick up, and other people are not. So I do believe there are super tasters. I'm not saying there aren't people like that, but Gugu's not one of them. Sorry. He doesn't have a superpower. He thinks he does, but he doesn't have a superpower. He's just ordinary like me and like you. You're just ordinary.
No, I'm extraordinary, girl.
No, Sia, you're also just ordinary. I hate to break it to you. You're not 9 and in a Brussels university getting your bachelor's degree. That guy's extraordinary.
That little boy.
Yeah, a little 9-year-old is getting a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering. Yes, he's special. Guess what? The rest of us are not.
That Doogie Howser.
All right, what else have you got? We've got a little bit of time before we bring Louis in here. We know Louis Janssen from Rendsburg. He's from Heavy Chef, and we're going to talk about the work they've done. They've done an entrepreneur education survey, which I think you might find interesting. He's going to tell us all about that.
More tweets. The doctor says, it's bad. Me, how long do I have? Doctor says, 67 years. Me, tearing up, that's so long. Doctor nods, way too fucking long. Oh, people have one baby and
that's actually not a tweet. That's from Leanne's last doctor's appointment.
Yeah. People have one baby and revolve their whole life around it. You've known that thing for a month. Like, grow up.
All right.
Another. Oh, my fucking God. We have to keep washing dishes and then putting them away, then putting more food on them and washing them and over again until we die.
Well, like, what else do you want to do, person?
That's how it feels sometimes, Sia. That's just how it feels.
Do you sometimes look at your dishes and cry, Leanne?
Well, I've seen some nifty
sounds like
ways.
You do.
If you put clear plastic over your plate.
No.
And dish up on top
no.
of it.
No. We are not.
That is such. That is the laziest thing I've ever heard in my life.
I also know people who
by,
lie on top
point,
of their
at this point, I feel
bed.
Like you are saying people. But it's you.
No, they're YouTubers.
Go on. What
promise.
Do?
They've got these beautiful beds, these YouTubers, in their backdrop with fairy lights and everything. And their beds are always impeccable with a million scatter cushions on them.
Oh, that's the best.
And you think, how do they make this bed every day? No, her and her husband lie on top of it with a thin blanket over them.
No.
They never make
really?
The bed. Yeah.
Wow. That's unbelievably lazy, though.
Huge.
Because really, it doesn't take that much time. You know, making a bed is really not hard. If people are so lazy, that's embarrassingly lazy. God, if I was like, I mean, if you can't even make your bed, what kind of a life are you going to have?
Problem.
Life is going to be hard for you. It's going to be really difficult. All right, let's get Louis in here. I want to talk to him. You've heard of Heavy Chef, right? We've done a lot of collaborations with them over the years because of how they keep their finger on the pulse of entrepreneurship. They've just released their findings in an annual Heavy Chef Entrepreneur Education Survey. The survey is the largest and most comprehensive study into the learning habits of entrepreneurs that South Africa's ever conducted.
Sure.
There's so much to take away from this survey, especially if you're a business. So we thought we'd get Louis Janssen from Rendsburg, the chairman of the Heavy Chef Foundation, to tell us some more about that this morning. And on the topic of entrepreneurship, I saw that Richard Branson had to apologize over the weekend because he tweeted out a picture, or he put, like, yes, even these billionaires don't learn, put a picture out of a bunch of entrepreneurs here in South Africa that he'd met with. and he didn't have enough black people in the picture. Mm. So a whole lot of people were like, oh, where are the black people in the picture? Because obviously it's all about them. You know, it's all about me. Me, 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 me. And Branson had to apologize for this picture just because, you know, he didn't think about the racial composition of the people in the picture because he's not obsessed like we are in South Africa with race. Anyway, he had to make a big apology, and it's all terribly embarrassing. And we don't know what's going to happen there. But, yeah, you just don't go on Twitter, no matter who you are, Branson or anyone else. Okay? Good idea. So, Louis, welcome, man. How are you?
How's it? Good.
Yeah, nice to see you.
Yes, mutual.
And congrats on the congrats on the survey.
Thank you. It's been something that's been close to our heart for some time.
You went and asked 4,000 entrepreneurs in South Africa.
Yeah, just over 4,000, and not just like in Cape Town and Jersey. I mean, we went that's across amazing. The country. You know,
it's
went
a huge
the townships.
Number. Yeah, it's such a huge number of people.
Yeah, it's also you realize where the heart of South Africa is because you see all this like diverse group of people. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about diversity in terms of skin color, just character. You know, mm-hmm. people who are passionate about making a good cup of coffee and then building a business around it, you know.
Right.
So it's been fascinating just listening to everyone's stories, young and old, poor and rich, everyone that you can think of. And it's been, you know, listening to the good news stories as well. You know, that's one thing about entrepreneurs, the eternal optimists, you know.
They
in
are.
A sense.
I think that, you know, you have to be if you're going to start a business, especially in this country at this time, you almost have to not be a realist, because if you were a realist, you wouldn't survive, you wouldn't make it, you'd go crazy.
Yeah, a lot of entrepreneurs in this country that I know are very much part of the hashtag I'm staying group.
Oh, really?
So you really do have to be all in.
Yeah. It's also, if you think about it, like character trait, what it takes to spot an opportunity. You need to be open to ideas. You know, you need to constantly, I like to call them problem obsessed, you know, but not in a bad way. In a thing like you walk down the street, these guys, they just see something wrong, a small detail, and they want to fix it, you know. And if you go through life with that kind of productive mentality, you become, I think...
Are these entrepreneurs, you say openness is one of the characteristics. Are there other overwhelming characteristics that identify? Because entrepreneurs can't be a majority of the population. It's probably a small minority. What are the characteristics that you picked up across the board?
Yeah, we think about, you know, the distinction between an entrepreneur and being entrepreneurially minded. You know, not everyone's cut out to start a business. It's
right.
It's pretty difficult.
It's it's horrible.
As you know.
No, it is. Everybody's like, oh, it's so great. Must be wonderful. I'm like, nah, not really.
I call it the entrepreneur disease. You know, you kind of get, you know, an idea for a business gets into your head and it infects you, you know.
Yeah,
you
it does. You become a little bit obsessed with trying to do things differently. And
Right. And then you get people, but everyone has the ability to think entrepreneurially, meaning, you know, not to think that the earth is flat and think critically, you know, about life and, you know, try and test certain ideas and, you know, trial and error and figure out whether it works or doesn't work. And that's one of the traits with entrepreneurs that we've noticed. It's a trial and error mentality. It's like, you know, I don't want to go and sit in a class and learn about how to run a business.
I'll just start it and see where I end up.
Literally that. Oh. It's as practical as that gets, you know. Some of the stories we've heard is like, you know, one of the skill sets that entrepreneurs say they lack is HR and talent management.
Yeah.
You know, they rate
across
themselves.
The board, this is what they say, that's their biggest kind of gap.
Yeah, knowledge gap, it's that and finance, you know, which I think the finance part, we all wouldn't be too surprised about that. But it's the HR and talent management stuff that they say.
Maybe some people would be surprised by that, because a lot of people think that business is about finance. It is in that you have to manage cash flow and you have to be able to keep good books and know where the money is. Know how much you've got, how much you need to borrow, how much you've saved, etc. But that's not the primary driver.
So much more. People, HR, ethics, work ethics, skill sets, managing all of that.
Attention to detail.
Well, look, I mean, the list goes on, right? It's like, you know, I always say to young entrepreneurs specifically, you know, you need to be a jack of all trades, master of some. You know, and that's that really does come down to it. If you run a business, you need to be, you know, have a bit of knowledge about everything.
Yeah.
But there's certain areas that you're really, really good at, and leaning to the real strengths. And you can see it in their learning habits as well. It's, I mentioned trial and error, but they want to, you know, if they want to know about finance, the way they do it is they go sit next to an accountant and they start understanding their books, and they have conversations and they meet with other entrepreneurs and they share stories about how they screwed things up, you know, on the in the finances, etc. And through that process, they learn.
It's quite a lonely thing being an entrepreneur too. Some people manage to find a partner who they can do it with, and often those are very successful. You look at Google and some of the big Silicon Valley startups. It's usually two people, Hewlett and Packard, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But the reality is that a lot of these people operate on their own. And they also don't attend these entrepreneur events. They don't go and do like things with other entrepreneurs. They sort of orbit on their own. You know, they don't have this organization that they belong to.
Yeah, we call it a masterclass of one.
Yeah.
You know, because it truly is that, and it's amplified when you are in a disconnected area, you know, away from the major education institution, you know, where all the exciting stuff happens in inverted commas. You know, we've noticed when we spoke to entrepreneurs, successful as well as those that are in informal areas, that they do articulate the sense of loneliness, but they don't frame it in a negative sense always. They're also, you know, they're entrepreneurs, so they are the crazy ones. They're the ones that kind of by definition want to do something by themselves, and it extends to their learning habits as well. Obviously, you know, with your informal entrepreneurs, logistical constraints, and we say that broadly, it's transport, but it's also like access to data, has an impact on the ability to find, you know, knowledge and, you know, watch YouTube videos. We met with a group of entrepreneurs, and Alex, who they call themselves fashion entrepreneurs. One of them has this label called Brave, bit of a hip-hop vibe to it. But you sit down and you see how they learn about running a business, and they get together like two or three of them, two or three times a week, and they have a cell phone in the middle and they watch a YouTube video, so they share the data costs and they have conversations around what happens there. So it's a kind of an informal way of learning, but they get tremendous amount of value from that learning. In fact, that's the kind of learning that they trust the most, more so than, you know, government coming into with a particular entrepreneur program that says, you know, here's the five steps of entrepreneurship.
Or educational programs. It's, you know, I would trust well-researched Google videos or YouTube videos over some education programs.
And that's, you know, when we say masterclass of one, they've become really, really good at filtering out the bullshit, you know, so they can look at streams of information and just quickly discern whether it's useful to them or not. And the way that they figure that out is they can think about their business as it is now and if they can apply it now. They don't think too much long term. And there's a big focus in academia around like creative thinking skills, emotional intelligence, and those are, you know, we all know those are important skills, but for the entrepreneurs, they just want instant gratification. Learn, you know, teach me how to run my finance, how to manage people, how to, you know, market and brand my business. It's really pragmatic, really tangible in some sense.
Yeah, and they're not interested in flowery ideas and, you know, any of the crap associated with what most people think starting a company is, manifestos and that sort of thing.
Right.
That's for NGOs and for politicians. You want to start a business, you want to make a product, deliver a service, right, and you've got a clear path to making that happen.
Yeah, it's exactly that. And that's why I say they've become really good at filtering out information, because there's no shortage of information out there, you know, clearly. Yeah. So they've just become really, really good at finding information and applying it on their business. And they don't seek it from formal, like, learning programs. You know, 3/4 of the entrepreneurs in our surveys said that they've never attended a program, entrepreneur education program. But they also have no interest of getting on some kind of conveyor belt and, you know, taking them away from their business for 6 months. You know, that's what their focus is on, is, like, building a business and spending as much time as possible possible on their business. Mm. And their learning habits are pretty clear. I mean, they sit in bed 2 a.m. and watch videos or, you know, listen to podcasts. You know, audio came through quite strongly in the survey as well. And that's how they learn. They'll be walking down the street on their way to a meeting, and they'll see something in a, you know, a shop, and it will spark an idea. It will spark something that is relevant to their business. And they would be the only ones picking that up. And they find a tremendous amount of value from that. And the other one, sorry to interrupt you, but like the other one that, you know, came through quite strongly, which doesn't surprise any of us, it's the role of family and friends. You know, growing up in an entrepreneurially minded family, I call it the dinner table conversation, you know, where people talk about the business, has a direct link, the survey showed it clearly, to the longevity and the success of the business. And that is a big challenge for a lot of entrepreneurs in South Africa, with a lot of first generation entrepreneurs who didn't have the exposure of, you know, sitting around the dinner table and having conversations. So they go out and they self-organize and they find other like-minded entrepreneurs and have conversation. It really is through conversation and then the practice, trial and error, that they learn.
That's incredible, because that's something that I suppose people underestimate, the value of just being around other people who talk like that. If you grew up in a house where that sort of stuff was never discussed, and where you didn't really have conversations as a kid, your brain just doesn't open up to it.
And you listen to some of the successful entrepreneurs, they'll share stories of how they grew up. You know, after school they'll go to their dad's business and they'll do their homework at their dad's business. Mm. But they'll, you know, observe and they'll interact with people about, and they'll see the challenges of, you know, the practical challenges there is of running a business. And when we ask them about what type of learning do you prefer, they all mention it's that kind of learning. It's the informal learning, it's the practical learning that comes through. I mean, a lot of them do, you know, have attended formal entrepreneur programs, but they've kind of seen it as a way of just building out their network and meeting other like-minded entrepreneurs, as opposed to the content that they learned.
I think there's also a feeling of a lot of the course is going to be stuff that I already know or that I do better.
And more importantly, it's presented usually by someone that has not started a business yet.
Yes.
Right. So, and that's why when you talk about, like, you know, when we talk about
conversation, entrepreneurs are not interested in academics or in people who don't have practical experience.
They may have the patience to watch videos and listen to podcasts in order to further their skills or knowledge, but they actually aren't very patient people, as far as I can gather. They just want to get the job done and everything going and the mechanic moving.
It's also in part out of necessity, because, you know, cash flow is important. So things are, you know, we need to sell this now, because
yeah, time. You guys discovered that lack of time is the biggest barrier to learning for those older with more mature businesses.
And it makes sense, you know, if you've got a business that's grown and it's a mature business, there's so many, you know, aspects and dynamics that you have to think about. You know, you've suddenly got like 40 staff members to listen to and listen to their, you know, the goods and the bad news. And so, you know, they've become really good at compartmentalizing their education, their learning.
Yeah.
They've also been really good at identifying one or two people that they can sit down with and soundboard ideas with.
So, Louis, we've been asking you questions, but what are the big takeouts from your survey? What kind of stuff can you tell us about?
I think, again, the loneliness of the entrepreneur journey is extended beyond just starting a business. It also goes into their education and the way they learn. You know, the 2 a.m. in the morning thing that I mentioned is actually like the kind of feedback we hear from entrepreneurs. It was not surprising to us, but it was really shocking when you walk into a Deep Slurt and you speak to entrepreneurs, then you ask them, how many of you have a mentor or anyone to soundboard the idea? And like, no one puts their hand up. It really hits home. So they kind of just, you know, they want to know, how do I, you know, develop a business plan? And their biggest question is, who can I speak to do that? And then they go to Google, you know. That's by default where they go to find out.
But at least there is Google, because before people didn't know who to turn to, and there just wasn't anywhere else. You were kind of set adrift.
There were books, but they were written years ago and in the public library. and not relevant anymore.
Also, these business books don't, the entrepreneurs don't read those.
Well, it came through in the survey as well when we asked them, you know, what type of content do you engage with? It's short format video and audio.
They don't read these stupid business books.
Mm. Right. But also, it makes sense to a degree. It's like, what do you... You know, if they want to see stuff in action, mm-hmm. right, it's like, you know, they want to use their eyes and they want to use their ears. And they're, you know, watching a how-to video in terms of how to, you know, write a
better use of your time.
Better use of your time.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to just reading and seeing five steps in terms of, you know, writing a business plan, but it doesn't color in the information. Really practically give you. Audio does that, though. Like, it was the second most used preferred format for entrepreneurs. It's, again, it just, there's something about the way that audio internalizes the learning. Like, you listen intensively, and entrepreneurs do listen very intensively.
That's interesting. What is the age that most people start their own businesses?
Yeah, that was a profound stat for us. I mean, the average age for when entrepreneurs started learning about running a business is 24 years old in South Africa. That's old. It's older even in the informal communities. But there's also a lot of people who had an 8-to-5 job and decided to start a business, you know, when they were like, you know, 50 years old. And so the average was at 25, and that does say something about the state of, like, you know, your primary school education and, you know, the value that, you know, people get from that and the ability to develop entrepreneurial skills.
But I'm also curious, because some people only develop the confidence much later on. And if you think about people who really made a lot of money, they only make it later on in life. There are very few 20-year-olds who become millionaires for good reason, because you haven't experienced anything.
Or can sustain it.
Yeah.
Well, again, like, it comes back to almost like emotional maturity and experience in
life. Absolutely.
You know, but look, I mean, at the end of the day, like, there are many entrepreneurs who started businesses younger than 24, 25 years old. It's just in the process of starting, they started learning. It's the first time that they realized, oh, jeepers, now I need to know how to get product from point A to point B.
Sure. It's not so easy.
It's not so easy. And that's why there's another trend that stood out for us. We call it like learning in small circles. We've been really impressed about how entrepreneurs self-organize.
Yeah.
You know, when we ask them about like how they share their learnings, you know, they say face-to-face, one-to-one. They want to sit down with other entrepreneurs and they want to have conversations. So I always say to people, if you want to, you know, build, you know, mentorship programs and those kind of things, like, make it contextually relevant. Bring, you know, people in from your neighborhood that knows the tiny down the street, you know, that knows the street names. People connect with that. We, you know, as Heavy Chef, we're an education company, an entrepreneur education company.
Yeah.
When we first went into Khayelitsha hosting events and things like that, we brought people like, you know, Sean Thompson, pro surfer, you know. People just didn't connect with them. Like, you could see them sitting there and there was no, like, fire in the eyes. There was no connection, you know. But then we brought in people like Masachaba and Lovu, DJ Spew, and it was literally like a rock star kind of atmosphere. Like, literally kids swarming them, and we had to get security and all those kind of things. But the most important thing is, like, people listened to them because it was contextually relevant. They listened to that person's story and they're thinking, well, you know, I can relate to that. It's in proximity to where I am and I can get to that. So there's an aspirational component to that.
Yeah. All right. Well, I suppose you've made this available.
Yes, you can go to heavychef.com to download the survey. We have a free version that highlights five of the biggest insights of the survey.
And if you want more?
Get in touch with us. We're really passionate to get this into corporate South Africa. You know, we need companies to be more entrepreneurial. But also, you know, if you're an educator in the business of educating entrepreneurs, you know, we'd be keen to help you out to how to sharpen your education programs, bring them more in line with the needs of entrepreneurs.
I just want to ask this question quickly. Somebody says, I want to ask Louis, how effective are these multi-level marketing schemes in training or making entrepreneurs successful? First of all, what is a multi-level? I don't even know what that is.
Well, there's snake oil in the name, isn't there?
You
already don't trust it just because of the name.
What is that?
So I'm actually not 100% sure.
Sounds like bullshit.
It feels like one of those affiliate kind of, you know, It's like, I'll teach you something, but then, you know, tell five other people about it. And
like a pyramid scheme.
Get a commission out of it.
Those things are a disaster.
So again, it's not authentic. It's like, it certainly didn't come up in our survey at all.
It's from Seven.
good question.
Yeah.
Because
there are a lot of people who are out there marketing snake oil. And they're trying to, you know, everyone who is a successful entrepreneur has cracked some kind of code on their own for whatever it is they do, which is why they've been successful, because they found a gap in the market no one else had exploited before, or they think about things differently. And it's a very individual experience. It can't be learned and blueprinted and reformatted for someone else. Otherwise, everyone would be an entrepreneur.
There's no copy and paste.
No.
Right? But also, that's why entrepreneurs, they listen to other entrepreneurs. They would sit in family conversations, and their uncle who's never started a business would tell them something, some kind of philosophy about starting a business. And they'll just
ignore it.
Tune out.
Yeah.
So they want to listen to entrepreneurs who've actually been through the trenches, and they seek those people out as well.
Amazing. Well done on the survey.
Thank
and
you.
Louis is the CEO of Education Investment Fund Glengarry Capital and Chairman of Education Not-for-Profit the Heavy Chef Foundation, which is why he's here to talk to us today. He's a PhD researcher on the future of learning. You're completely overqualified.
Pretty huge.
He weaves storytelling and empirical data to challenge us to reimagine the way that humans learn. And this is an amazing study that's been conducted. You can find out more by going to Heavy Chef, and the survey will hopefully give you some ideas. And if you're in a big company and you want to know how to get a few more people thinking entrepreneurially, then maybe you should contact them as well. Very, very nice. All right. Oh, Seven says things like World Ventures, Amway and Avon. Yeah, those are all pyramid schemes, and they're a disaster. Stay away from them. And if you are recruited into them, run a million miles. Just terrible. It's like Herbalife as well. Isn't that also one of them?
Yeah, I don't know if it is anymore.
Oh, what a lot of crap. Run a mile. Those things are dangerous. All right, thanks so much, Louis. Thank you, everybody. We will see you tomorrow between 6 and 9. Have an excellent day in the company of CliffCentral.com. Decrypto Season 2 is on the way. We're on to Episode 3 already. You want to hear more with Luna and Cliff Central? You're in luck. It's Monday. Here's some more for you to hear. There's been a lot of talk and a lot of money made and lost with cryptocurrencies. It's easy to get carried away with the hype, but we wanted to delve a little deeper. We're at Luno HQ in Cape Town, where engineering manager Rick Kleinhans is talking about why crypto is getting the attention it is and about Luno's different approach. He's also got the simple steps you can take to get your slice of cryptocurrency.
Why cryptocurrency, for me, basically comes down to the idea of an open financial system. It's a pretty big and unique thing. We have an opportunity to build something for finance that is similar to what was built for communication with the internet. It's a unique opportunity, and it's an exciting thing to be involved in. I think something that's also unique from the early days of the internet, when you had networks evolving, it was very difficult to get involved. Here you can spend 50 Rand, get some cryptocurrency, and have some exposure to the upside of this new ecosystem that's evolving. Being able to get exposure to an experiment for so cheap is pretty good. 50 rands worth of upside on the internet, even if it fails, is fine. Flying cars failed, but if you had 50 rand to put into flying cars and 50 rand into the Wright brothers building planes, and you did both, then things would have worked out pretty well for you. And the role that decentralized currencies are playing in an open financial system growing across the world, where you can send and receive money from anyone in the world with just a computer and an internet connection, is pretty special. And unlike any other tools to send money, it works without the need to trust the middleman. SnapScan is just in South Africa, but not in Zimbabwe. Apple Pay is just in America, but it's not here. Wherever you are, anyone, you can just send them some money and access it globally. There is definitely certain successes that have already occurred within the ecosystem. You know, for remittances between different countries in Africa and Southeast Asia, you're already seeing the use case and seeing people moving money more easily with Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies than they would with traditional services. And just the security that Bitcoin is offering, you know, the computing power of the Bitcoin network offers more security than like all the computing power of the US government and Google and Facebook and everyone put together. So that's already an interesting feat as it stands. We were quite early movers in the markets. Four companies offering the ability to go between a local currency, not just crypto and crypto, but a crypto and a local currency we can offer, you know, stable currency pairs between local currency and cryptocurrencies, which most other people can't, especially if you're talking internationally in many countries. Dealing with the banks is something a lot of cryptocurrency companies choose not to do. Don't care about the banks, the governments, all this stuff. We've always taken a very different approach and tried to collaborate quite closely with regulators and tax authorities and banks and all these things to take them along on the journey and help form the regulations. So it's basically just a couple of easy steps. You can either go to luna.com, sign up on the website, or if you're a mobile user, Android or iOS, just download the app. And once you've got the app, it's basically just verify your email address, take a picture of your ID, and then you're set. You can buy some Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin Cash. So there's three different ones. They're all available, and we're always investigating new ones and what people are using.
Decrypto is everything you need to know about buying, trading, and spending cryptocurrency. Brought to you by Luno. Only on CliffCentral.com. CliffCentral.com.